Right now, Chad Adams from up in Oak Island is with us here this morning. He joins us weekly, typically now on Tuesdays a little after 8 o'clock, keeping us in the know with some things going on just across the state line. Yes, we've got a number of growing listeners tuned in throughout the southern end of Brunswick County, heading out to Tabor City near the state line there, Columbus County, moving into the independent republic of Brigadier General Peter O'Ree County, of course, here for you this morning. Chad, how are we doing over there in Oak Island today?
Oh, it's a winter wonderland, Joe. It's just a winter wonderland, man.
Yeah, and well, no doubt, up in Brunswick County, you all got a lot more snow than we did here. I mean, we were like 5 inches here. You're upwards of what, 12, 14 inches up on the beach?
It depends on where you were. We certainly had closer to 8 to 10 here at this particular location. Longwood, just inland from here, had almost 18 inches. And, you know, I think Holden and Ocean Isle got quite a bit as well. So it was weird because a lot of people felt they got ripped off. Like they go to bed. It was supposed to be here Saturday morning. Then it was Saturday noon. Then it was Saturday at 3. Nothing but, you know, sunshine, clouds. And then a few flurries that night. And you go to bed. And then the next morning, it's like, wow, you know, it's just caked everywhere. You wake up and it's a different world. So it was certainly different for the coast. It's kind of nice. Hey, we had some last year. We had some this year. So, you know, all that global warming kicking in, making it beautiful winter down here.
Back-to-back years with snow. Yeah, 3.5 inches last year. We had 5 inches here on the Grand Strand. Chad, I always enjoy the texts and the call-ins. And there are some detractors out there. The hater's going to hate, and all you can do is shake it off. But I enjoy the back-and-forth banter. And as I was, before the break, highlighting a recent Harvard-Harris poll, because obviously the talk nationally has been illegal immigration enforcement, the actions of federal agents up in Minnesota. And I was highlighting a recent Harvard-Harris poll, you know, not one of the more conservative surveys out there, showcasing that 67% of Americans think local officials should cooperate with federal immigration enforcement, something that your then-Governor Roy Cooper vetoed after it was passed in the state legislature a couple years back in the Tar Heel State. I say that because anytime you mention something positive, the detractors will come back and say, man, you're just hailing the orange guy and pushing all of this Trump propaganda. Okay, so we'll start there. Chad, you're an even keel guy. You know, you lean to the conservative libertarian side of things. And there's no one that I agree with 100% of the time, my wife included, by the way, which often creates an interesting dinner conversation around the table on a daily basis. But nonetheless, I mean, when you were in this chair years ago up at the Big Talker, and you know, you'd be along the party lines, and then you'd stray off and say, hey, yeah, this is my view, and it might differ from what you're hearing in the mainstream or even from the elected people that you may have voted for once, twice, three times in the case of Donald Trump. You know, what's the often response when you feel like you're being told that you're just a shill for, you know, the mainstream candidates on the Republican side?
Well, a lot of times it means you've won the debate. I mean, if someone's incapable of having discussion about a given issue, that means they don't have a defense. Their defense is, okay, you win on that issue, therefore you're a Trump person. And it's a very shallow, it lacks a mental depth. And the issue is, for instance, in North Carolina, we have IRENA's law. You know, that's a kind of making the local law enforcement cooperate with ICE officials. Charlotte is a city that isn't a sanctuary city, but it is a sanctuary-friendly city. In other words, they will do the bare minimum. It's called a welcoming city. If you have those in South Carolina and other places, they're called welcoming cities, where they will do the bare minimum they have to do to barely cooperate. So they're sanctuary because they're illegal in North Carolina to have a sanctuary city by law, but you can be a welcoming city and be sanctuary light. So on that issue, you know, if you have to ask them, then you would say, hey, okay, forget the orange man bad for a minute. What is it you really want? If your opposition is to ICE, then go to your congressional folks and have them change the law. But they're not doing that. What they're doing is saying they want to have it both ways. They want to say, well, we don't want to change the law, but we want to keep everybody here. And you can't do both of those things. So they put themselves in a box when they do that instead of having the debate about illegal immigration. And interesting, they don't want to talk about when Obama used ICE. They don't want to talk about when Clinton used ICE. They don't want to talk about the history of it or the enforcement of it. They just want to say orange man bad, and they somehow feel like they want to fight.
And I know I've stated this a million times, Chad, and you know, you could dig in, find poll numbers that you agree with, that you're opposed to on any given survey. Yeah, so the counter was, all right, 67% want local officials to cooperate with federal authorities when it comes to immigration enforcement. 56% of Americans disapprove of Trump's handling on immigration. And I've said it a million times. Large swaths of the American people agree with the policy, but oftentimes disagree with the rhetoric or even the implementation of said policy. Yeah, I mean, this isn't really hard if you're paying attention on a day-to-day basis.
It's not. I mean, it's interesting that when they were bringing the immigration numbers down to illegal immigration numbers down to about zero, the American public, the left, didn't say anything. It's funny they didn't go back to look at the Kamala Harris going down and being the border czar and root causes and millions pouring across the border. They didn't say anything about people in cages or anything that the Obama era people in cages that they tried to put on Trump. They were okay with that. But now that we've got, so we've secured the border, now we need to go find the criminal elements that are here in our country and those that have broken the law to get here, and we've got to rectify that. And they don't like that. And I hate to say it's a voting block issue, but there are many that believe on the political left that this signifies a potential voting block, because in the coming census, they're going to lose some significant seats in Congress in various states. Also interesting that in immigration in California and Texas and Florida and even North Carolina, there's not been any incursions with violence with protesters. None. It's isolated to Minnesota because that's where the organizational stuff took off. And that's caused most of the rift. But you even see now, in the, not a capitulation, but certainly, hey, we'll put the body cameras on our agents. Are you guys going to still shut down the government? Democrats don't want to talk about the issue. They want to get distracted on the side of the issue.
With that said, we'll bring it back here to some more statewide and regional news in a moment. But just one other topic, because I know we've discussed this before. And President Trump, you know, talking about being at odds with the commander in chief, not all in 100%. Okay, we could talk about tariffs. We could talk about how many people feel that he's not super focused on the economy, more foreign policy and immigration and whatever may come here in the next several months leading into the midterms. But he's also this week calling on Republicans to, quote, nationalize the voting as he pushes to
the SAVE Act.
Yes, through the SAVE Act. You're not one to want to give the federal government more power, even though there might be question marks across the board in states all over the country as to the way people vote and how those votes are then tallied.
Well, two things here. Three things. So the tariff issue is it's kind of a standalone issue. They had the huge deal with India. I think that's going to be significant. You know, these tariff deals, and they're striking down a lot of the tariffs because they got a trade deal with India. It's a means to an end. Separate from the SAVE Act, then we've got the government shutdown that's linked to ICE and Homeland Security. The Democrats are kind of running around in circles figuring out what they're going to do. But the other one is the SAVE Act. And the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, said he's going to unattach the SAVE Act from the budget cycle. Now, with respect to that, and I am a keep all politics local and a federalist from that standpoint. Let's get as much local. That's why I get rid of the Department of Education. A lot of these things you can turn into state agencies. But on the SAVE Act, we should in this country have a way to make sure all votes are counted the same way across the country. There's no reason we can't have that. And being able to prove that you are a legal citizen and have the right to vote, it should be, that's as constitutional as it gets. That's not racist. That's not negative. It's not any, it is a way to ensure that both sides can say that election, the integrity of that election is intact. And that's the direction we need to head in. And that's not a left-right. It shouldn't be a left-right. I'm astounded now at what becomes a left-right issue, because left-right is not what it was 20 years ago. It is, or 30 years ago. It's very strange now what becomes a leftist issue.
Just amazing when you tune in to previous comments made by those who are still in elected office 40 years later, how they flip so drastically on the issues of the day based on the one, as you highlighted before, pushing the agenda. And in this case, it's the Republicans, which we all know when the Republicans are in our charge, all hell breaks loose across the country for one reason or the other, mainly to, in my mind, influence the public sentiment on whatever issue or policy that's top of the news cycle on any given day. Chad Adams with us from Oak Island here this morning. All right, let's bring it back local. And I know you're up in the Tar Heel State, and I know that you've sat on the board of a charter school. Last week was National School Choice Week, and we've been a little bit behind in terms of offering school choice to South Carolina aged kids, while North Carolina has gone all in. There are some 536,000 kids who have opted for some form of school choice over the last few years in the Tar Heel State, from charter schools, magnet schools, private schools. Of course, homeschooling has seen a surge for people who are just keeping their kids at home. In fact, when you look at here in Myrtle Beach, we have two new charter schools that are set to open here in Myrtle over the next year. North Carolina has seen the fourth largest growth of charter schools in any state of the country. Having said that, where do you look at school choice at this juncture? And, you know, should we continue to go all in and trying to, you know, what does they say, a rising tide lifts all ships?
Well, the original, one of the original suppositions about charter schools are they are government schools. I mean, they're funded with taxpayer dollars, but they don't have the same restrictions. In other words, they were set up to be experiments to say, hey, what works and what doesn't work, instead of this monolithic K-12 National Education Association or, you know, union of teachers. What works? And so there's hundreds of different ways that charter schools use to educate in different communities, whether they be marginalized, you know, communities, demographically challenged, or economically challenged communities. And we found a number of things that work in different communities, and that was the goal of it. I think that COVID and the big government policies, the way that the extreme shutdown, the extreme egregious overreach by government, really propelled it into it put it on steroids. So the homeschooling took off, the charter schools took off, private schools for people who could afford them, education opportunity scholarships, which are scholarships to go to private schools in some disadvantaged communities and others. So I think the experiment is well underway. I think that the national education public schools have really hurt themselves by looking monolithic, by looking intractable, and worse, looking partisan. And that's when Randy Weingarten, the former head of the NEA, the way she conducted herself through all of this, you know, the school shutdowns, the lack of choice that she wants. Now she's much more of an activist. Now she's away from that organization. It just shows that the entirety of public education was in the tank for one political side, and it was about power, not educating our kids who have fallen behind in reading and mathematics relative to the rest of the world. And that's a shame. That's a real loss.
Now, having said that, you know, as I mentioned before, to preface this topic, you have served on a board of a group of charter schools right up the road in Brunswick in Columbus County. My kid goes to one of those charter schools. And I'll just say this, you know, just kind of a word of caution, right, for those parents out there who might be thinking about putting their kid into a school of choice, mainly a charter school. Things are done differently at the charter schools, so you have to, you know, pack that into your mindset when your kid starts to go there. Whether it be a new school that's getting off on its feet, you know, there are going to be some bumps and, you know, things that you're going to have to, you know, kind of maybe even sometimes just you know, swallow your pride and watch how it plays out. I get it; it's your kid's education. I mean, I think something is new. There are things and kinks to work out, and from what I've seen from my kid now in second grade, each year it's gotten progressively better from the organization, the communication, those sorts of things. But there are certain codes that your kid and yourself are expected to adhere by, and you know, that sometimes causes a little conflict with the parents who are used to the traditional structure of the public school system.
They are, and schools of choice, charter schools are schools of choice. They can also, if your kid doesn't act a certain way, they can say you're no longer welcome here. They have a little bit more freedom in that, and what who they can. They can't choose who they take, but they can choose who they keep if kids are disruptive or present disciplinary challenges. But at the same time, you know, that school system, we have not, is there a school in New Hanover County, there's a school in Columbus County, and there's two schools in Brunswick County, and it looks like there may be a high school being added to that in the near future. So it's grown and it continues to thrive, and I'm not on that board anymore, decided to go in a different direction, but an amazing opportunity and for kids and parents. But again, the expectations are higher, and the code of conduct is higher, and the way your kid's going to learn values is important. It's tantamount to success. They link the value system to the success of the kid and the value of education. So, yes, it's a great opportunity. And one would hope that public schools would learn from that and start implementing some of those ways of doing things and make our public schools stronger and better.
Yeah, and that's sort of the sentiment that I get from our public school system here in Horry County when we get monthly updates from our friend Lisa Borsier with the PIO, the Public Information Officer. You know, they rarely detract from people and their choices, but they say, you know, we need to utilize this to look inside and say, how can we be better? Because they have actually seen a slip in enrollment this year, just a slight dip. And for one of the fastest growing counties and one of the fastest growing states, maybe a bit of a surprise to the public school advocates out there that people are opting for a school of choice. But there are some differences. But here in Horry County, at least the public school system has said, hey, you know, we're all in on the competition, and maybe it'll raise our bar to be better for our kids, our staff, our teachers, and our faculty. Chad, before we wrap up here this morning, and just on that note, here in South Carolina, do you want to get your thoughts on this? You talk about you know, codes of ethics and different sorts of things. We have our raised values that you know, we need to master inside of our house and in the classroom. They spend time on it every single day. We talk about respect, accountability, integrity, service, and excellence. Well, are we going too far, as some lawmakers want in South Carolina, advancing a bill that would require the Ten Commandments in every classroom throughout the Palmetto State?
That was a big move in North Carolina not too many years. When I was on the radio, that was a big move in North Carolina to get them posted outside of schools and stuff like that. I remember someone took a whole granite stone, I think, put it outside the legislature one time. You know, I don't know. I mean, we are a Judeo-Christian country. We're founded on those values. It is the foundation of our legal system in this country. It's interesting. I don't know that I want that in the school system. The values that are conveyed by it, yes. Crossing that line into religious expression is different. So I think it's a great debate to have. I'm not inclined to believe that's going to make our schools, but you can teach those values without putting a stone tablet in front of every school.
Right. Don't kill your classmates. Respect your mom and dad. Don't take your neighbor's wife. I mean, these are all sorts of things that we should probably be adhering to without having to state the Ten Commandments verbatim while in the classroom.
Yeah. That's more of a libertarian perspective, but yes.
Chad, thanks so much, as always, for your input and your thoughts here this morning. Appreciate the time, my friend. Thanks again.
Always. Always enjoy, Joe. Have a great day, you and bro.
All right, it's 8:23 here. Good conversation with our friend Chad Adams up in Oak Island here this morning.